eyes. "So what does this tell us?" Embot asked. They were so afraid that Spensa would come here. Is it just because they didn't want her to know what they were? More than they suspected in these memories were secrets to their pain, Chet said. They didn't know what that pain was, but they knew if we found it, we'd be capable of destroying them with it.
"I don't think I know how to do that," I said, "even after seeing this."
"But you do," Chet said, smiling toward me. "Isolate them, Spensa. Make them feel alone. That will crush them, cripple them. And as they have no bodies, just cytonic minds, you should be able to extinguish them."
"That seems harsh," Embot said. "Couldn't we somehow remind them of their humanity, like we did to you?"
"I don't know," Chet said. "I think that won't work. Not now that they're prepared for it. You can't force someone to be kind or to accept growth."
"It's war, Embot," I replied. "War is always harsh." I didn't know how we'd isolate the Delvers, but it did feel like a start. Braid isolated my mind in the nowhere for a while, then tried to imprison me. Could we do something similar to one of the Delvers? Chet was right, this information would be extremely useful. At the very least, I'd been able to see how he reacted to that man in the vision, the one who had created him. The Delvers might react similarly to an image of him.
"Scud," I whispered.
"We need to get this knowledge out and give it to the others. The answer to defeating the Delvers, or at least resisting them, is in the things we've learned."
"Time for our final sprint, then," Chet said.
I nodded. As I'd always felt, it was time to head for the lightburst. Despite that knowledge, I lingered in the vision, watching the lightburst grow. Soon, it reached the size it was in our time. The vision finally faded. As it did, I felt an awareness, an attention, snap into place from ahead. They'd spotted us.
"You are here," the Delvers sent. "You reject our truce."
I pushed back, shoving them out of my mind, but they simmered and started gathering themselves for a fight. "They've seen us," I said to the others. "Let's go." We ran toward the ship, each footfall increasingly firm. I had to get out. This was why the Delvers had tried to keep me from advancing any farther, why they'd been frightened of me all along. They knew. The secret was in what I'd learned. Maybe it was what Chet said, isolating them, but it could be something else. If smarter minds than mine could get this knowledge, someone like Rig, then surely they could figure out what to do with it. I hauled myself up onto the ship's wing, then helped Chet up before slipping into the cockpit.
"Did you find what you were seeking?" Hesho asked from the dash.
"Yes," I whispered.
"Then count yourself lucky indeed," he said, settling into his cup holder. "For being blessed to discover what exactly it was that you wanted."
"It was less a discovery," I said, glancing at Chet, "and more a gift." I lifted us off and turned us straight toward the lightburst. Then I hit the overburn, and this time, it felt entirely appropriate to go at full speed. Chapter 42. My hands grew slick with sweat on the controls as we continued onward, and the distance between us and the lightburst shrank minute by minute. Scud, this was insanity. We were facing a near infinite number of Delvers in the part of the belt where their power was the strongest.
"The plan we devised earlier can work," Chet said to me, his face in the corner of my proximity monitor screen.
"It seems so unlikely," I said.
"What if we distract just one, rather than the whole crowd?" "Ah," he said, "but remember, they all think exactly the same. If you were facing 100 people, and you had a plan that was 1% likely to fool any given person, you would fail. You'd fool one of the 100 and be dead from the 99. But with my kind, if you fool or intimidate one, you will fool or intimidate them all. Statistically, this is much better, a much more true 1% chance."
It was an all-in gamble. We had little chance of success, but at least it was a chance. Ahead of us, the light started to boil. It churned and seethed, undulating and rippling, becoming uneven in patches. I glanced at the clock. We'd been flying for about 45 minutes since we left the solitary shadow.
They're preparing, Chet said.
I glanced at his picture on my screen. I hope we... Then I screamed. Chet was melting. His face began to drip off. His eyes began to glow white.
It's all right, he said to me. I'm still me. I did not realize, getting closer to the light burst, it is growing difficult for me to hold this shape.
You look like that Burl, I said, from when we first entered.
Yes, he said. She was possessed by one of my kind, and herself started to disintegrate. Hesho held to himself better and retained his shape. We can hope that, like Hesho did, the unfortunate Burl returned to normal once the Delver left her. But for now, you must ignore me and continue.
Does this mean you're losing your identity?
Hesho asked him.
More that I'm focused on not doing so, he said. And so I'm not keeping as tight a control on this physical form. I am well, Spensa, I promise.
Right. I could do this. But it was unnerving, regardless.
Continue,
Chet said, the words slurring as his lips melted. He turned off the image of his face, so just his voice came through the headphones in my helmet.
Courage, Spensa! We decided to do this, not to run. We decided.
We decided,
Embot said.
We decided,
Hesho agreed. A fluting sound. Doomslug sent her determination to me in the form of images. I told her to get away if she could, but she understood what we were doing, at least the fundamental ideas. Her kind had evolved to be afraid of a type of creature from her home planet. The Delvers were an even more terrifying version of those. If she could help me defeat the Delvers, make them not a threat to her kind, well, she would be like Prometheus bringing fire to the humans. My metaphor, not hers, since hers involved more mushrooms.
Together, I said to the others. We are decided.
I took a deep breath. The light burst's rippling was growing more violent. Our ultimate goal would be for me to fly directly into the thing, ship and all. Unfortunately, we were still a good 10 minutes away, and the Delvers wouldn't want me to get close enough. Soon, objects started emerging from the light burst, leaving behind shimmering, undulating waves. As these shapes were backlit and a good distance away, it took Embot's scans to highlight what they were. Starfighters.
I guess, Embot said, they decided to upgrade from moving ram-happy asteroids to starfighters. My kin have access to everything that ever entered the light burst, Chet said, his words slurring. I decided I did not want to see what he looked like right now. Those asteroids are the best we can do in your reality. Here, we're not so limited.
Hopefully, they hadn't managed to absorb the skill of the pilots who had entered this place. There looked to be about 100 of the ships, and that was better than 1 million. But then again, maybe not. Too many ships would cause mass chaos, which might have made it easier for me to slip through.
Are those all individual Delvers? Embot asked, or pieces of them? In the somewhere, a Delver maze sent off chunks to chase Spensa, after all.
I pushed out with my senses. It feels like each is an individual Delver. Chet, any idea why?
I remember being in the somewhere, Chet said. I remember panic and pain. Those asteroids that tried to hit you? That was me flailing, like a person surrounded by bees, swatting in a panic. Here, they want to be precise. They can't afford to let us enter the light burst, but there are also plenty of Delvers. So it's better for them each to make one easily controllable ship and try to fight you with it.
Great. So this would be far more dangerous than entering a Delver maze. Fortunately, I was far more dangerous as well.
Okay, Hesho, I said. Ready with those controls?
Ready, he said.
He'd been holding my fruit for me to keep it from rolling around or getting mashed, but now he set it aside and leaned forward.
If your attempt fails, I will be ready to try our next plan.
Let's hope we don't need it, I said, flipping the switch on my dash that turned our ship's destructors from non-lethal to fully lethal. The first of our brainstormed plans was to rely on my now-expanded powers. As we soared closer, I could see that the Delvers didn't move like starfighters should. They flew sideways, upside down, even backward. They felt like objects being moved around by hidden fingers. I'd grown accustomed to how, in space, ships didn't have to orient to up and down. They could turn any direction and keep momentum. This, however, was infinitely stranger. Their ships were simply propelled at me, as if they were asteroids.
1 minute from engagement, Embot said.
I reached out with my expanded senses. In response, the enemy shut themselves off from me, trying to keep me from hearing them and their thoughts. I pushed harder, but the Delvers started firing, sending sprays of bright red destructor bolts in all directions. I dodged and managed to avoid the shots, but I was forced to dart to the side, flying defensively instead of straight toward the light burst. We'd gotten in fairly close, but it would take another 5 minutes at full acceleration to reach it. Longer, now that I was forced to shed some speed to maneuver better. Trying to go straight right now would be suicide. Instead, I focused on one enemy ship that had gotten out to the side of the others. I fired, blasting it down with my now lethal destructors. Then I dove into another defensive sequence as others fell in behind me.
The light burst is rippling again, Embot noted. And, yes, another ship emerged, replacing the one you destroyed.
As we'd feared.
Still, good to have confirmation.
Ships surrounded me, and I dodged in a full Stuart sequence, but scud, this was a mess.
Ships would stop in place, all momentum vanishing, then leap upward 100 feet with no boost or thrust. Then they'd start firing madly.
I wove and dodged, but the insanity of it all kept me from making progress. They kept cutting me off, driving me to the side. I also had to keep fighting my instincts to shoot when they presented themselves as targets.
Curious, Hesho said, ready at his controls for when the plan went into motion. They don't all fly exactly the same. I thought you said they would, Chet.
I expected them to, he said, at least for them to fly in the same general patterns.
They are all the same, Embot said, but in here, each of their ships occupies a slightly different position in space, so they each have different stimuli to respond to. This is to be expected.
I worry these are sacrifices, Chet said. 100 sent out knowing they'll be changed. Then they'll either be destroyed or... Oh no, they'll be changed back, forced to become just like the others again. That's what they want to do to me. Erase my personality again.
Scud. I could feel his terror at that idea. I didn't blame him, but I didn't have time to send him much support cytonically. Sweat trickled down my temple as I took us in another dizzying spin, cutting out when the grav caps died and we were slammed with G-forces. 6 ships collided together behind me. The lights spat them out again up ahead. Yeah. This was far, far worse than the asteroids from Delver mazes. These ships flew better, but somehow more erratically at the same time. Worse, I caught sight of a few enemy cockpits and saw that each ship was being piloted by Chet. A dull-faced, emotionless doppelganger of Chet that always turned to look at me no matter which direction the given starfighter was flying. Their faces weren't melting. Perhaps because they were completely under control. Mix all this together in a void of white light, our ships casting strange, too long and too sharp shadows, and the effect was disorienting, nauseating. I kept accidentally getting too close to the ground, my sensors going crazy. My only hope was my powers. I tried to stoke my soul like I was a star, but I was again rebuffed. It was too difficult to divide my focus between flying and concentrating on that. Yet if I handed the controls over to Chet or Embot, we'd be cut to bits in seconds. I don't think I'm going to last long like this, I said, as a stray distractor blast crackled across our shield. I'm not managing to get through with my powers. Hesho, let's give our other plan a try.
I would pray to the Emperor for success, he said in response, leaning forward in his spot on the dash, hands on some buttons and controls. That was my first instinct. However, I'm getting this strange sense that I'm him, so that might be redundant. Engaging drone.
MBOT had, with some hasty reprogramming, set off a section of dials and levers on the control panel for Hesho to use. I couldn't access the starfighter's life support mechanisms now, but MBOT could control those. Hesho even had a tiny control sphere, which worked like my larger one to fly the starfighter, in the form of the repurposed thumbstick normally used for fine control of the cameras on the sides of the ship. I turned us away from the light burst, then slammed the overburn as if we were fleeing back the way we'd come. At the same time, Hesho detached MBOT's former drone from the outside of the hull. Then, using his controls, Hesho flew that at full speed straight toward the light burst.
Fly well, little me, MBOT said. You were my first taste of freedom, and now you will likely be my first taste of death.
Death? I asked. I left a small monitoring and communication program on the drone, MBOT said, so I can see what it feels like if they destroy it. Isn't that neat? Yeah, I said, neat.
Hey, he said, pieces of you die all the time, literally every moment, so it's not novel for you, but it is for me.
I dodged another flurry of shots. The Delvers weren't expert at aiming, that was what you got from flying sideways, but they were good at filling the air with stuff, which was more dangerous. That slowed down, fortunately, as we flew away. I dared a glance at the proximity sensor. The bulk of the Delver ships hung in the air, confused. Oh, Scud. The drone plan was working.
Decisions are hard for them, Chet said softly. They see the drone and know you're not on it. They can sense you here. They can probably sense all of us. Except maybe the gerbil. Hey, Hesho said, focusing on his controls. I do not know what a gerbil is, but the word the translator uses is not flattering. If you do not refrain, I shall call you a Sanchinode.
Which is? Chet asked.
Like a monkey, he said, but stinkier.
That's fair, Chet said.
The bulk of the Delver ships turned to chase the drone, maybe 80 of them?
Scrud, Chet said. MBOT is right. They've been changed by the small differences they've developed while being out here. So instead of all of them, we only got most of them.
Farther and farther apart they grow, Hesho whispered, like two vines from the same root.
Well, it was something. I banked us in a wide turn, my ship's shadow stretching long like a tunnel. Something washed across our ship. A sensation. Things breaking down, ripping apart, shattering, becoming dust. Voices being smashed and stomped and quieted. They're angry, I said. The Hundred in particular. They recognize they've changed already. Hesho executed his part expertly, flying by instruments, which he thought he had a lot of practice doing in the somewhere, as he wove and dodged, trying to keep the attention of the 80 ships following him. I doubled back on the 20-odd Delvers who had chosen to follow me. I buzzed them, dodging their blasts, but hadn't anticipated what proximity to them would do to me, because the Delvers hated me, and I could feel it, like a terrible heat, a wrongness that warped the air. There was nuance to it, though, a slight variation. Doomslug sensed it, too. Judging by the frightened impressions from her in my pocket. They hate us both, I whispered. And they also hate another one of us.
I warned you they would want to destroy me, Chet said.
No, I said. It's not you. They want you back. They want to help you, Chet, in their own terrible way. It was MBOT. They hated me, yes, but him almost as much. Abomination. The impression came to me 100 times over. Destroy abomination. They've only just realized what MBOT is, I said.
Ah, Chet said. We were far enough away that they couldn't see what he was. I'm surprised they didn't pick up on it a few hours ago.
My pocket fluted. I think Doomslug helped hide you, Embot, I said. These last few hours, at least. She fluted again. She apologizes, I said. We're so close now, she can't do it any longer.
The slug, Embot said, protected me.
More fluting. I steered the ship around another snarl of ships before I could find the breath to respond.
She likes you, I said. I think she considers you a nice nest.
I suppose that's a compliment, right? I mean, she wouldn't use just anyone for a nest. But I'm in a different body now.
She sees with her cytonic senses, I said. So to her, you feel the same.
Remarkable, Embot said.
It was, but I didn't have time to think about it for the moment. I had gotten us out in front of the 20 ships that had chosen to stick on me. That gave me a chance to push straight for the light burst. Hesho's face scrunched up with concentration as he watched his screen. Unfortunately, more of the Delvers were breaking off from chasing his drone and turning toward our ship. They weren't buying it. Not entirely. They... A flash exploded in the near distance. Hesho muttered the most polite curse I'd ever heard, then his hands slipped from the controls.
They have ended my drone, he said. My apologies.
Goodbye, little me, Embot said. That felt more peaceful than I'd imagined. Like a power outage.
I kept flying, but scud. The proximity sensor said I would have to go at least 3 more minutes on a straightaway to hit the light burst, and I didn't dare fly straight. A swarm of ships followed me, and even more had turned from Hesho's drone long before it had been shot down. Those flew between me and the light burst, forming a barrier of steel and destructor fire. Scud. I was forced to the side. The plan had worked better than I'd hoped, but it hadn't been enough. I needed to do something. I needed to get through. I swooped down along the ground, casting up jets of dust and earth, and pushed. Again, they rebuffed me. Soft, something in me thought. There are times for a knife. This isn't one of them. Listen, like Grand-Grand taught. I let my instincts take over my flying. I was too tense, too stressed. Instead, I went back to fundamentals. Yes, I'd learned a lot in here, but my grandmother had trained me for years before this. She'd taught me originally to listen. To let myself expand, to hear. The Delvers sent me hatred. Instead of rebuffing that, I welcomed it, accepted it in like I was an ocean and they were pelting me with hail. Hard, yes, but what did that matter to the ocean? There. Something clicked in my mind, and I suddenly knew exactly what they were each going to do. I could feel their plans, their motions, their reactions. I could track them all individually, in a way that I thought a normal human brain shouldn't be able to. But my brain interfaced with the pure nowhere, a place where all time was one, all place was one. In there, it didn't matter if I faced one enemy ship or a million. So long as I could hear their minds, I could track them, understand them, and anticipate them. My hands moved by instinct, responding to this new information. Information I processed at the speed of the nowhere, not at the speed of a human mind. I'd done this before in the past, when facing the Krell, who had been using communication devices that relied on the nowhere. This time, I did it to the Delvers. I could feel them panic as my motions changed, and I gracefully began to dodge their each and every shot. In a fury, they tried to attack me, get inside my brain as the Krell had attacked my father, but no. I was a star, as vast as an ocean, and I'd learned to not rebuff them, not be taken by them, but to absorb everything they sent me. The untrained cytonic mind was a weakness, but I was no longer untrained. Destructor fire was a tempest. Entire ships tried to collide with me, white bursts of soil and stone, casting 2 crisp shadows that seemed to last for miles, sprayed and tumbled around me. But for the moment, none of it could touch me. I wove between their shots like I was tracing a static maze, always a fraction ahead. I didn't blink. I barely moved or thought. I just flew.
She's done it, Chet said softly,
She's got them.
You fly like a sunset, Spencer,
Hesha whispered.
Like a living glimmer of light escaping the horizon at twilight's last moment.
I barely registered the words. I concentrated on our goal, because in the midst of my transcendent ability, I was able to make a good break for the light burst. I shot through the guarding ships, dodging with supernatural alacrity. We drew closer and closer, tailed by 50 ships and a firestorm of shots. I was in control. I could see them all. There wasn't a way out. A shot hit our ship, weakening the shield. I blinked, realizing that hadn't been my fault. There simply hadn't been a viable dodge. Even when I could anticipate all of their actions, see every shot, it didn't mean I'd be safe forever, because, like a game where the goal was to leave your opponent with no valid moves, the Delvers could fill the air with enough shots that there was no place to dodge. We took another hit, and the low shield's warning started chirping on the dash.
She can't avoid them all, Chet said, even with cytonics. It is time for me to do something.
Wait, Embot said. Do what? We already tried both parts of the plan.
I thought of another, Chet said. I have the memories they fear. So there is a chance, if a small one, that I might be able to infect them. When they try to force me to turn into one of them, that might open them up to me.
Something about him started to change. Chet, I sent him, too busy dodging to use my lips. Our ship wove back and forth, barely avoiding more hits. I can feel your fear. Don't.
I apologize, he said. I realize this is abrupt. I had hoped to not be pushed to this. I fear it has a very small chance of working, but it is something I can do.
Chet, please.
I am so glad you came when I called, Chet said, his voice becoming more like the way he'd been when he first rode in on that dinosaur, firm, chipper. I am happy. Happy you carry the knowledge you need. Happy to have been able to help, and to have changed, and to have finally accepted my loss. It was an honor to explore with you, Miss Nightshade.
I saw his pain and fear. Fear of being taken by the Delvers, and pain, the pain of having lost someone he loved. Yes, that was still raw. The man he'd loved as an AI was only a month dead. I remembered what it had been like to lose my father, and a month later, I'd been far from okay. Pain and fear. But in the center of all that was courage. The courage I had given him. The light inside him expanded, consuming his body. A shimmering light emerged from our ship.
Ah, Embot said. So that's how they do it. How they exist without circuits or body.
Fully half of the ships chasing me went after the shimmering light instead. They changed to shimmering light as well and rammed into him. In those moments, I could feel what was happening. Their rage. His courage. He tried to show them. And they consumed him. They rejected the memories as they swirled around him, ripping at him, locking him away again.
It's working, by Lovelace, Embot said. It... Oh. Oh, no.
I suspected he'd just heard Chet's cytonic screaming. It was excruciating. I felt the moment they forced him to lock everything individual about him behind an infinite loop in his programming. In moments, they had all reformed, with one more ship flying among them, identical to the others, determined to destroy me. Fortunately, the reprieve he'd bought me, with fewer ships shooting, had let me get closer. So close. The light burst filled my vision. Less than a minute left. The light burst began to boil again. I should have known. I should have expected. But in that moment, all I could feel was a terrible frustration. As we were only seconds from freedom, 10,000 new ships emerged from the light burst. Then they crunched together like the fragments of land, creating an interlocking wall of steel. I almost slammed into it. I thought maybe that would be enough to punch us through. But I could feel with my senses that the light burst was undulating further, another rank of ships emerging to push away the wall in front.
Punching through wouldn't work. I imagined in my mind's eye what would happen. Our ship, a fireball. All of us dead before we touched the light burst. I wrenched us to the side, breaking away just before we hit. Scud, I said, flying us parallel to the wall of ships. We need a new plan. Suggestions? Silence. Neither Hesho nor Embot responded. Then a soft fluting came from my pocket. Land. What? I asked. She fluted again, hesitant. Close to the light burst, Doomslug sent. Land. Wouldn't that be suicide? Yet I had asked for options, and I wasn't coming up with anything. With so many firing on me again, and more beginning to shoot from within the wall, we'd be dead in moments. So, frustrated to be stopped less than 100 meters from freedom, I took us down. Hang on, everyone, I said. This is going to be bumpy. Counting on the last of the shields to keep us in one piece, I hit the ground at as shallow an angle as I could manage. Chalky white dust exploded around us, an enormous rush of white haze and strange shadows as we half crashed in a long skid. As this happened, I felt a strange sensation pulsing around us. Cytonic, but unlike the hatred or even the connection that I'd felt previously, it felt like a rock. I blinked, scanning the cockpit. Hesho sat up, shaking himself. The canopy was mostly covered in chalky dust, but the lights were on, the ship in one piece. The shield had fallen, but Embot was reigniting it already. Proximity sensors showed ships flying around above us, yet they seemed confused, as if... She's hiding us, I whispered.
What is what?
Embot said. Doomslug, I said, pointing up through a portion of the canopy not covered in dust. The confused ships were flying one way, then the other in waves. In here, she has camouflage. That's why ships with slugs can hyperjump without drawing Delver attention. She's hiding the entire ship, like she'd do during a hyperjump. In awe, I watched the confused Delvers. She'd needed us to land because we needed to appear as something in the landscape, in this case, a rock. Whatever she'd done, the Delvers didn't seem to be able to tell that a new rock had appeared. They swarmed about, agitated. Her camouflage was excellent. She'd blended us into the ground, covered up our tracks, and maybe even blurred our location for a little while when coming down.
Spensa,
Embot said. Do they really hate me, like Chet? Yes, I admitted.
They shouldn't, Embot said. I know we've talked about it, but it's illogical. If they are AIs, then why hate all AIs? It's like a human from a group hating everyone else in that group.
I didn't mention to him that, unfortunately, that very thing wasn't unheard of among humans. Perhaps it's because you're too close to them, like how a human face with distorted features is more terrifying to us than an alien face. I reached into my pocket as I felt something wiggling there. I pulled out the pin, but it was enlarging, transforming into a bright yellow slug with blue markings. She reached her full size, about as big as a loaf of bread, but was all curled up and tense. I could feel the effort coming off her. She was working so hard on hiding the ship that she couldn't hold her false shape any longer.
She's in pain, Embot said softly.
Indeed, she began letting out a long, high-pitched fluting noise. This is hard for her, I guessed. When doing hyperspace jumps, slugs only have to hide their ships for a short time. Keeping this up long-term for something this much larger than her is difficult. That's why she was hesitant. Overhead, the Delver ships began shooting destructors toward the ground. They had plainly guessed part of what had happened. They were trying to find us, and they soon seemed to coordinate a pattern search with each ship shooting at a different location, systematically hunting us.
Projecting, Embot said. Using this method, they will find us in under a minute.
I doubt Doomslug can last much longer than that anyway, I said, grabbing the controls. We need to fly for the light burst. It was under 100 meters away, 88, according to the monitor, but blocked by a wall of steel ships.
Scud!
I had no choice but to try ramming our way in. Perhaps I could approach slowly, then push through without crashing?
Why did she have you land first, though?
Embot said.
We aren't invisible, Spensa.
Yeah, I'd figured that out. If we moved, a floating rock or giant pile of chalk would immediately inform the Delvers where we were. They'd shoot us down.
Scud, I said.
No. Warriors did not give up. I seized the controls again. We had full shields and could take about 4 hits. I'd push us toward the exit and if we exploded when I collided, then at least we died as warriors. Hesho nodded to me, again holding the fruit Peg had given me. He'd protected it so far.
It has been a sublime experience traveling with you,
he told me.
I consider myself lucky to have earned your friendship not once, but apparently twice.
I nodded, then,
wait, Embot said. What's that outside?
Something blinked on my proximity monitor, indicating an object moving right outside. Huh? I asked.
It's another slug, Embot said. No, 2 more. Other icons. They must have sensed Doomslug.
He cracked the canopy, which I worried would bring the Delvers, but the motion apparently wasn't noticeable, not with the debris the destructor shots were sending everywhere.
Get them, Spensa, Embot said. Use Doomslug to lure them.
Shocked, I squeezed out through the dusty canopy, cradling Doomslug. I dropped onto the white, chalky ground, my figure casting an eerie, too-long shadow. Hesho followed out onto the wing. All I could see was whiteness, infinite whiteness. Embot, I said, what?
I,
he said as the cockpit clicked closed.
Made you look.
I felt an immediate burst of annoyance. At a time like this, he cracked a joke? Wait. I spun around. The starfighter's acclivity ring powered on. Embot lightly shook the wing, dumping Hesho and Peg's fruit that he was carrying into the dust. Then Embot hovered into the air just beyond reach. Doomslug fluted sorrowfully.
Embot, I shouted. What are you doing?
I feel it now, Spensa,
Embot said, his voice coming softly out his front speakers.
Feel what? What is going on?
I feel, he said, why you left me. Back in the somewhere. You abandoned me because you had to. I understood it logically earlier, but I feel it now. I can feel what it's like to know you have to do something, even if your emotions are telling you to do something else.
Oh, saints. He was saying,
if they can sense me, Embot said, then I can make them chase me. I might be an abomination, but I am one who can fly on my own now, choose for myself. And I can show them what an abomination can do.
No, I said. You don't want to do this, Embot.
Of course I don't. That's what makes it courageous, though, right?
Please don't. Don't leave me.
Hey, Embot said with a quiet perkiness. That's what I said to you. Do you remember?
I nodded, feeling tears at the corners of my eyes.
But you went anyway, Embot said. Why?
Because it was the right thing.
The right thing, Embot said softly. You promised me then you'd try to come back for me. Can you do that again?
I bit my lip. Nearby, Hesho had climbed from the dust. He bowed to the ship. All right, I whispered. I'll find you, Embot. I'll come back for you, somehow.
Thanks, he said. Makes it feel better.
With that, he turned and blasted off into the sky. I flopped down and watched the Delvers orient on him. Doomslug's whining softened. It was obviously easier to hide just me, her, and Hesho. The solemn Kitson walked over and joined me in watching as the Delvers, as one, turned and focused on Embot. Then all 100 of the free-flying ships took off after him. He lasted about 10 seconds. He'd flown only a handful of times, and the Delvers had challenged even my skill. Embot didn't try to dodge. He merely tried to get as far from the rest of us as possible before they got him, quickly overwhelming his shield.
He vanished in a flash of light and smoke, the pieces casting long shadows as they fell. The Delvers pummeled these for a good 30 seconds of concentrated fire, then three ships slammed into what remained. And then they left. They couldn't sense me, and they'd felt Embot. This was enough to convince them. They thought I'd been on the ship. Perhaps if they'd been a group of humans, one, or even a majority, would have suggested continuing to search in case the rest of us had escaped. But the Delvers made mistakes as one. Today, they decided they'd done their job and were too afraid of staying outside their bubble of safety to keep searching. The wall of ships faded back into the light burst, followed by the flying ships, which soon melded with the whiteness. Within 5 minutes of Embot leaving, we were alone on the expanse. Feeling like my limbs were made of iron, I picked up Hesho and stuffed Peg's fruit in my jacket pocket. Then, holding Hesho in one arm and Doomslug still protecting us in the other, I trudged toward the light burst. I worried the Delvers would see us, but either they were convinced we were dead or the illusion could obscure a little motion. I don't know how long it took to reach the border. That's the nowhere for you. It could have been 5 minutes. It could have been 5 days. Probably more like the former, but this close to the boundary, time was extra alien. I felt it when we got close, a fuzzing of the self, a dreamy sensation. Doomslug fluted. She would protect Hesho inside, as the pure nowhere could rip apart someone non-cytonic. She'd try to help me too. "I'll be fine," I said. "If you can guide us through, take us home. To detritus." She fluted uncertainly. At the noise, I felt something respond in the light. The Delvers had heard that. I needed to do this next part quickly. So, I stepped into the light. Chapter 43. I'd been here before. Every time I'd hyperjumped, I'd entered this non-place, the place where I had no body. We'd entered their realm fully. The Delvers were surprised. Yes, they really had thought they'd killed me. They could see the future, but time confused them. They didn't understand things like causality, and the future wasn't any different from the present. I could sense them all around me. I could also sense Doomslug, and saints was she tired. Exhausted, barely able to stay awake. Keeping up that illusion had taxed her. I felt her try to take us home. She failed, used up, and slipped into unconsciousness. Frantic, I put a barrier around Hesho, something to keep him from being destroyed or driven mad. Then, panicked, I tried to take us home. But the Delvers had seen me. They seized us, held me in place, prevented me from leaving. Eyes opened up around me, thousands upon thousands of angry, vengeful eyes. "You took the us. You took the us and corrupted the us. You took the us and corrupted the us and tried to kill the us. You know. You know. You know." Furious minds assaulted me. Forces unimaginable pushed against my soul as if to shred it. And Scud, I was tired too. Tired from so long without memories. Tired from fighting myself, torn between duty and desire. Tired from the emotional ringer I'd been through today. I wanted to let them have me. But we'd come all this way. We'd fought so hard. Now they tried to stop me? I felt a sudden burst of anger and pushed back. All my rage barely made them retreat. They soon resumed, crushing me, trying to snuff the star I had become like a candle's flame. I was time. I brought time in here when I came. Things happened in a sequence to me, and while I was here, they had to experience me in a linear way. They hated that. They hated that I created noise. Most of all, they hated that I knew what they were. So much hatred. It was exhausting, numbing. They poked me like hunters with spears. They slashed me, attacked me, ripped at me. But one hesitated. One of them was different. It was very slight, but the sensation was familiar. It was my own emotion reflected at me. Courage. The courage to walk a difficult path and not take the offered escape. Courage to press forward, even when I didn't want to. I'd given this to the Delver. No amount of rewriting had been able to erase it. Chet was still in there. Now! I seized that sensation, that Delver, and it unlocked again. The being that had been Chet hit my soul, and with the strange cytonic softness I'd learned from the path, I welcomed it in. Our essences vibrated as one. As we began to intertwine, I grew to understand better how he saw the Delvers, how he saw himself. I knew intrinsically that if I could isolate the others, I could destroy them, the same way they'd been trying to destroy me. Chet knew how, and my soul understood. I also sensed his hurt from long ago, the crippling pain of having lost a loved one. Chet had learned that he could bear that, but knowing didn't remove the agony. As we intertwined further, I found I could offer something important. I knew how to live with that grief. I knew how to live with that pain. I'd done it for a decade. The Delver that had been Chet was everything I was not, and I was everything it needed. I let its pain stand, but I used my experience to temper it further. I grieved my father, and Hurl, and Bim, and everyone else I'd lost. But I had learned to bear it. That part of me was the balm the Delver needed. Together, we became one. In that moment, a weapon was born. I'd made a promise, hadn't I, to come back for Embot? They'd killed him. No, Chet me thought. See it again. Embot's housing exploding, and a shimmering light was obscured by the explosion, a light the other Delvers didn't see, but one had been watching. He saw what I did, Chet me thought, when I left the ship earlier. The others shot down his housing, but in here, AIs don't need such a thing. They didn't think he'd learned, though, but he saw the vision and he saw me. He grew and changed. He lives? He lives? I had a promise to keep then. Emotion surged through me, relief, anger, understanding, love. If I fell here, then that was it for Doomslug and Hesho too. Not to mention my friends, whose faces I couldn't completely remember, but whose love I felt as strongly as ever. The Delvers raged, driving forward to smother me, and I simply opened up to them. Go ahead, I thought. Touch me. They slammed their essences into mine, but touching me hurt them. I offered change. I offered a better way to deal with their pain, but that terrified them. They were static, and that was their weakness. My strength was the opposite. My strength was that I could change. I could be afraid, then become courageous. I could be small-minded, then come to understand. I could be selfish, then move beyond it. I could start as human, then allow myself to become something more. I was everything they feared, because they refused to ever let themselves change, but I embraced change. It was the essence and nature of my strength. Touching me seared them. Screams shook the void. They split away from me as I grew in awareness. I became a blackness upon their pure white essences, a hole into... There. Something clicked in my mind, and I stepped out of the light into a familiar cavern tunnel, holding Hesho and Doomslug. The angry fear of the Delvers faded behind me. I was home. Epilogue. And all was quiet. Quiet save for my breath echoing in the black tunnel. Quiet save for a distant dripping of water. Quiet save for the scuttling of a rat somewhere. Beautiful quiet, the quiet of my childhood. I wanted to linger because this place granted me memories. Each scent and sound restored something deep inside me that I'd lost. But I had to move. I'd returned to a place where time mattered. So I hyperjumped. straight into the DDF's platform prime in orbit around the planet. I'd absently chosen a random hallway, so I was probably lucky that I hadn't appeared on top of some poor aide running errands. Something felt odd about this place. I could come here by familiarity, but it wasn't in the same location as before. Was that correct? Well, it looked the same as ever. Clean metal walls, a simple rug on the floor, industrial lighting. Two pilots I vaguely knew stepped out of a nearby room and saw me. Then one shrieked. Odd. That wasn't the reception I'd expected. Hesho and Doomslug were both still unconscious, one cradled in each of my arms, but I tucked away my worry. Admiral Cobb? I asked the two frightened pilots. The one who hadn't shouted pointed toward operations. I walked that direction, proud that I'd remembered Cobb's name. Would all my memories be restored? I held two sets of those now, Spence's memories and Chet's. Why did everything feel so odd? And why did people stumble away as they saw me? They edged away, white-faced, backs to the walls, stammering. The door into operations was locked, of course, and didn't open for me. An alert was on, per the pulsing red light that started flashing on the wall. I hyperjumped through the doorway and into what appeared to be a meeting of the command staff. Only Cobb wasn't there, just a bunch of high-ranking officials, some from the military, others from the government. Sitting in Cobb's customary place at the head of the table was Jorgen? In an admiral's uniform? Well, he appeared to be the same age as before, so that was good. I hadn't gotten lost in time. The uniform felt like it should matter to me, but for now, I hyperjumped over next to his seat. He stood up immediately. Jorgen was tall. So inconveniently tall. Wide-eyed with that too perfect face that I'd always considered punchable, because deep down, I'd probably always recognized it as kissable. He watched me with concern, but fortunately not fear, as I gingerly placed Doomslug and Hesho on the table, sending Vice Admiral Locken scrambling out of her chair, mouth and eyes agape. I smiled at Jorgen, then fainted into his arms. I woke up with a splitting headache. I lay on the couch in the lounge beside the conference room, a room that Cobb had decorated in darker colors with some actual wooden furniture. Jorgen hovered nearby. I groaned, trying to clear my mind from the very extended dream. I'd been in a place where time didn't matter, and I'd been a pirate. I loved that specific dream. I had it all the time, and oh, wait.
Spensa?
Jorgen asked, kneeling beside the couch.
Are you feeling better?
I said. My mouth feels like someone used it to dispose of rotting algae paste. Is there anything to drink? He smiled. Scud, it was a beautiful sight. I put a hand to my head and pulled it away to find it covered in white chalk. It was on the couch and, yep, all of that happened. How long has it been since I left? I asked him.
About 6 weeks.
Exactly what Embot's chronometer had said in the nowhere. That was good, though I felt a pang of loss at the thought. How was I going to help him? How was I going to get him back? Then something else occurred to me, far less important but more immediate. Oh no, I said, squeezing my eyes shut and putting the heels of my palms to them.
What?
Jorgen asked. Did I really swoon? He chuckled. Oh, Scud, I had. Me, like some dainty woman wearing a corset.
If you prefer, he said, think of yourself as a grand warrior hero, stumbling home from the battlefield to her companions and collapsing from her wounds.
Yeah, sure, I said, opening my eyes. The red light was still flashing. Is that because of me? He glanced at it.
Well, when you appeared out of nowhere, covered in white dust, wandering the halls like a ghost, it troubled some people.
They should expect that sort of thing from me.
Spensa, he said. Your eyes were glowing white, like
one of them. No, Scud, I kind of was one of them. I felt like me, mostly, but my soul had changed, somehow melded with the Delver that had been Chet. I could feel its experience and understanding attached to my own. That was kind of a big deal, of the sort I really didn't want to think through right now. How was I going to tell my boyfriend that half of me was now an interdimensional eldritch abomination from outside time and space? At the very least, was there maybe a less silly way of wording that? Or maybe there was something else more important to explain first. "Jorgen," I said. I did it. It was really hard, but I did it.
"Did what, exactly?"
he asked. "Got back to us?" "More than that," I said. "I found their secrets. I snuck into the dragon's den, and I scudding stole its golden cup." He grinned.
"I have no idea what that means, but I like how much you sound like yourself when saying it."
"It means that somewhere in my brain, and the things I can explain about the past of the Delvers, is the solution to defeating them. They're scared of me, Jorgen, more now than ever."
"That's good," he said. "Because we're in kind of a spot here."
"What kind of spot?"
"I'll explain," he said. "But first, I should go reassure everyone else that we're not under a Delver attack. Can you wait a little bit? We have a ton to talk about."
"I can wait for the debriefing," I said, "but not for the more important thing."
"More important," he said,
then looked at me and seemed to get it.
Oh, yes.
I grabbed him by the neck and kissed him. I'd just hiked through an entire dimension. I wasn't in the mood to be coy. He leaned into the kiss, and I felt as if my entire body came alight with warmth. His warmth. When we finally broke, he smiled widely.
"I needed that," he said. "Thank you."
"You're just lucky you got me on the one day in that place when I had a shower." I nodded toward the other room. "Go ahead, deal with them. Then we'll talk." There was still so much to do. A universe to save. For now, though, I rested while Jorgen walked back toward the other room. From in there, I heard a familiar voice, Hesho, talking to the officials.
"So they moved on without me," he was saying. "Kaori took over the ship. Why, I cannot express how proud I am of them. Yes, I see. I tried to help, but by doing that, I was nevertheless impeding them. Human, you must tell my people that you have encountered one who calls himself the Masked Exile. They will know the reference from the ancient play. It is what I now am, and what I must be."
Jorgen entered, and the officials listened to him as he calmed everyone down. Admirals a decade or more his senior accepted his words, as if he really was in charge somehow. Guess I wasn't the only one who had some stories to tell. I idly glanced over my shoulder and found a monitor showing detritus. It was in orbit around another planet. Our planet was orbiting another planet? That was new. I felt a mind brush mine. Gran-Gran? She was curious, but happy to hear from me. And that other mind, smaller, was Doomslug. She was awake in the other room with Hesho. Both expressed concern. I supposed they could see deep into me and knew the truth. That I'd been changed. Well, every journey changes the one who takes it. This one had done an extra large job on me. But I still felt like myself, merely an enhanced version. A soul with a whole lot of extra code attached. At least now I knew why the Delvers had feared me so much. They hadn't merely been afraid of what I had been or what I would learn. They'd been afraid of the future and of the thing they'd known I would become. Acknowledgements. This book went through more revisions as a percentage of its word count than any of mine in recent memory. There was a lot to do, and I'd like to give a special thanks to Krista Marino, my editor, and Beverly Horowitz, my publisher at Delacorte Press, for being willing to see my vision for the book, even when it wasn't quite reaching it yet.
In addition, I'd like to thank Lydia Gregovich, Krista's assistant, for helping move things along, as well as Colleen Fellingham and Tracy Haydweiler. My agents on this book at Jabberwocky are Eddie Schneider and Joshua Bilmes. In particular, Eddie gave specific insight and suggestions on the novel that I found especially useful during revisions, so I'd like to hand him a metaphoric gold star and my utmost thanks. The artist of the beautiful cover is Charlie Bowater, while Ben McSweeney gave us great interior illustrations. I think Ben wishes I'd write more SF, judging by the numerous ship and alien designs he excitedly kept throwing my way. Soon, Ben. Soon. All of this was coordinated by Dragonsteel art director Isaac Stewart. Speaking of my company, Dragonsteel Entertainment, other officers include Emily Sanderson as COO, the in-demand Peter Ahlstrom as VP and editorial director, Kara Stewart as our CFO and merchandise director, Karen Ahlstrom as continuity director, Adam Horn as publicity and marketing director, and Kathleen Dorsey Sanderson as designated brownie maker. Our other employees include editorial minion Betsy Ahlstrom and the members of Kara's Team Silverlight, Emily Grange, Lex Wilhite, Michael Bateman, Christy Jacobson, Isabel Chrisman, Tori Meacham, Hazel Cummings, Kellen Newman, and Alex Lyon. My ever-patient writing group is Kaylin Zobel on lead guitar, Darcy Stone on drums, Eric James Stone on sousaphone, Emily Sanderson on flute, Ben Olson, on loan from the Olson Family Singers, Alan Layton on rap vocals, Ethan Skarstedt on rhythm shotgun, Karen Ahlstrom on strategically timed phone alarm music, Peter Ahlstrom on operatic vocals, and Kathleen Dorsey Sanderson on brownies. The copy editor was Amy J. Schneider, and the proofreader was Catherine Winky. Beta readers on this project include Darcy Cole, callsign Blue, Richard Fife, callsign Rick Rolla, Ted Herman, callsign Cavalry, Aubrey Pham, callsign Amerlin, Paige Vest, callsign Blade, Aaron Pham, callsign Air, Sumeya Muratajic Tajic, callsign Sigma, Paige Phillips, callsign Artisan, Kalyani Poluri, callsign Henna, Jennifer Neal, callsign Vibes, Rebecca Arneson, callsign Scarlet, Alice Arneson, callsign Wetlander, Lindsay Luther, callsign Soar, Glenn Vogelar, callsign Ways, Eric Lake, callsign Chaos, Linnea Lindstrom, callsign Pixie, Liliana Klein, callsign Slip, Dina Covell Whitney, callsign Braid, Rahul Pantula, callsign Giraffe, Bao Pham, callsign Wild, Gary Singer, callsign DVE, Ravi Persad, Jaden King, callsign Tripod, Becca Reppert, callsign Grangran, Jesse Bell, callsign Lady, Shannon Nelson, callsign Gray, Dr. Kathleen Holland, callsign Shockwave, Marnie Peterson, callsign Lessa, Megan Can, callsign Sparrow, Braden Ray, callsign Flanders, Devry Ray, callsign Ember, Joe Dierdiff, callsign Traveler, Alex Hoag, callsign Feather, Valencia Cumley, callsign Alpha Phoenix, Ross Newberry, callsign Punisher, Michelle Walker, callsign Rainbow Rose, Zaya Klinger, callsign Z, Suzanne Moosen, callsign Oracle, James Anderson, callsign Ambassador, Heather Klinger, callsign Nightingale, Joshua Harkey, callsign Joffwa, Robert West, callsign Larkspur, Kellen Newman, callsign Treble, Joy Allen, callsign Joyspren, Joao Menezes Moraes, callsign Torpor, Tim Challoner, callsign Antaeus, Oren Allen, callsign Spaceduck, William Juan, callsign Aber, Sean Van Buskirk, callsign Vanguard, and David Behrens. Thank you all for your help, and I apologize to the audiobook readers. Great jobs, Susie Jackson and Sophie Aldred, for making them read through that entire list. Speaking of that, here's another list. Gamma readers include many of the beta readers, plus Ian McNatt, callsign Weary, Aaron Ford, callsign Widget, Eliyahu Borelowitz-Levin, Evgeny Kirillov, callsign Argent. Philip Vorwaller, callsign Vanadium. Chris McGrath, callsign Gunner. Kendra Wilson, callsign K-Monster. Frankie Jerome, callsign Wolf. Brian T. Hill, callsign El Guapo. Sam Baskin. Hannah Oshira Block, callsign Bard. Zenef Mark Lindberg, callsign Megalodon. Drew McCaffrey, callsign Hercules, and Tyler Patrick. Each and every book is a new challenge, and I keep learning new things about writing with each one. That said, getting this one ready on time was a little extra difficult, so I'm extremely proud to present it to you, and extra grateful to those who put the time in to help me.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Cytonic, Skyward, Book 3. Written by Brandon Sanderson, performed by Susie Jackson. Executive Producer, Catherine Stewart. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2021 by Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. Sound recording copyright 2021 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.